is if ever so gently you are shifting your entire definition of who you are and therefore the kinds of friends you would have, the kind of associates, the circle of connections, the contacts you'd have. People that were background become figure. You're working in a company and previously you've been all involved with the most statusy people around who would really help you in your career. And suddenly you start to get higher and you begin to look and you find out that the janitor is a Buddhist. Janitor's not going to help you in your path at all, but the janitor really turns you on. Janitor's not going to help you in the business, but the janitor may help you become a better Buddhist. And suddenly you'd rather hang out with the janitor than with the vice president. I was with a fellow in New Delhi whose father had been one of the British officials before the Indian takeover of India. And he was actually an initiated Lama. But he also had a complete front of being a very straight guy, see? And he had, I don't know why Lama's on straight, but he they're too straight or something. Being crooked straight or something. At any rate, he had a front of being a respectable Western businessman type guy. And I was walking barefoot in this through the streets of India, through New Delhi, and I was walking with him, and we were very close, and we suddenly saw one of his father's business associates coming down the street, who he wanted to, and he said, would you mind, terribly, if you cross the street for a few minutes, and I'll meet you at the end of the block? I don't mind. It's gas. I think it's very funny. And I watched him go up and, how do you do? Yes, been to the club. You have drinks? Jolly good. And then he went on to the end of the block and we met and came back together again. And then we went out on our, on Mahayana Buddhism. On the great vehicle. Climbed aboard the great vehicle. I was standing over there, and Carl said to me, well, you look like somebody who's about ready to go down to the Washington meetings of the Psychological Society. Or you don't look like it. I think he said you do. You don't? You don't look like one who... Now, if I walk into the, like I've done before, I've walked into something like the Shoreham Hotel in Washington like this. See? Takes guts. I mean, it's not so easy as you might think. So you walk into the Shoreham Hotel, it's okay. It's all right. It's all right. It's cool. It's beautiful. And the looks are unbelievable. I mean, you just, the whole scene stops. And all the people not looking are the best. And if I walk in and all my old psychological colleagues are around, they'll go through the following changes. Some of them will say, poor Dick. Terrible what happened to him, isn't it? I mean, look at that. He's making a spectacle of himself. That's, of course, true. Others will say, he's really putting us on. Man, he's a great game player. Hi, Dick. Boy, you're really cool. Like, come on, let's have a drink. And they, of course, will be right and wrong also. Others will say, gee, I wonder what happened to Dick. And they'll come up and they'll listen and they'll hear that there is something different that makes who's wearing this somebody else. I was in Big Sur and some of my old rock and roll friends came down to visit me. I was having darshan daily up in the mountains of Big Sur. And there had been maybe 30 or 40 people just like us sitting around all afternoon drinking moo tea and talking. And it was very beautiful and playing the tambour. And then they all left. And just as they was leaving, this car drove up with these old buddies. the old buddies, and everybody was backing out the door saying, Namaste, Namaste, Ram Dass. And in walked these, hello, Dick, you know, like, wow, great to see you. Did you hear what happened to... And I sat with disbelief. I mean, it was like they had come to the wrong house. And I knew who they were talking to, and I knew what they wanted. But it wasn't, there wasn't anybody in here to respond to that guy, any, to those cues anymore. I just wasn't interested. Just wasn't interested. It was very poignant. It was so worldly. It was so attached. It was so much stuff. And they talked and they talked and they talked, and I sat there. It was like the story in Uspensky, in which Uspensky invited his friend to lunch, and Gurdjieff set up this fancy lunch, and then they all sat there, and for 4 hours, Uspensky's friend talked without stopping. And at the end, he said, gee, it's been a most interesting lunch. Thank you very much for having me. And nobody of the 15 people had said one word. It was a test of some sort. The guy never even realized that nobody had spoken. Well, these people talked and talked and talked, and I sat there and sat there, and I said, did they want to share supper, make prasad? And yes, and we made chapatis and kejri, and they talked and talked and talked about things. And it didn't seem to matter to them at all that I was not the least bit interested in anything they were saying. They couldn't stop long enough to hear that there wasn't the same guy back there, because they had an expectation of who I was, and I wasn't that guy anymore. I tried to be, really, it's funny, I tried to be. See, I wanted to be interested in what I used to be interested in, because I remember being interested in it. It was like when I went to visit Alan Watts and Tim Leary, both in California, both of them asked me at one time in the evening, what is your view of how all this is going? What is the plan for the universe? I said, I don't know. Well, don't you think about it? No. I don't think about it. And that ends the conversation. I mean, what do you do then? In the past, we could talk for hours about your plan versus my plan of how the universe is. But the fact is, neither of us really know enough, so why even talk about it? And when we know it, there'll be nothing to say anyway. So that whole idea of talking about how the universe is really just fun and games. Somebody said to me yesterday, you know, there's something really bad about this place because nobody's really laughing. I say, well, cosmic humor is not a guffaw in that kind of a sense. It's not a ha-ha-ha-ha type thing. That's more like kind of a hysteria. It's like I used to read the New York Times every Sunday. I wouldn't say from cover to cover, that's quite an almost an impossibility, but I would read the critical issues of the day. And I read Time magazine every week. And I'd read some other magazine to counteract Time, like, I don't know what, The Realist or... some liberal magazine. Then I went to India, and I for months and months and months, I never read the New York Times, and I never read Time, and I never knew what was happening in the world. I didn't know who was running for president in the United States. Imagine that. I didn't know whether we had made the moonshot. I didn't know whether people had been murdered. I didn't know what new drug laws there were. I didn't know that Martin Luther King had died. Imagine that. I mean, I, a good American, did not know that Martin Luther King had died. And at first, I felt very uptight about this, as if, like, because I had been so trained to keep, you know, keep your finger right on the worldly stuff all the time. And I thought it must make a difference because everybody's so busy doing it. I mean, every man that's worth his salt at the breakfast table always has his morning newspaper. And the comedy routine always is the wife's trying to have a conversation and she can't because the husband is so busy learning about the affairs of the world so that the day will work. Because there are important things to be known and thought about. And I didn't think about any of them for all those months. And then a Westerner came from the United States and I spent an evening with him. And his head was full of these things. And in the course of the evening, he told me this happened to Martin Luther King and this happened to Lyndon Johnson and this is who's running and this is, and so on. And I got a synopsis. You know, the New York Times gives a summary every week. I went from the daily thing, finally, to the summary at the week. See, I was getting better or worse, less involved. Because you got the 6 o'clock news, and is the 6 o'clock news different from the 11 o'clock news? And now we've got a big coverage at 7 in the morning because something may have happened during the night. And I suddenly saw the way in which nothing really happened in the world. Because everybody was constantly reassuring everybody that the way they were now thinking was the right way to think by constantly reviewing it all from the same vantage point. And it was only those guys who pulled out of the whole mess for a while and just sat back and got free of that constant attitudinal input. Started to look and say, can you imagine the absurdity of that preoccupation? I meet old friends of mine from the days when I was involved in the psychedelic world, and they'd say, do you know what the law now states? Do you know who was busted? Do you know what the government said? Do you know? And, you know, and I'd say, no. I'd say, aren't you interested? I'd say, no. Does it have anything to do with my consciousness at this point? Is there anything I'm supposed to do about them? No. See, the delicate problem is this, that as you start to experience higher states of consciousness, you are slowly extricating yourself from an entire network of attitudes and associations that have reinforced your being at the level you're just leaving. And everything around that will constantly tell you, come back, you're making a mistake, come on back. So that when a child starts to change, the parents say, we don't understand you anymore. People say, what's happened to you? Your friends say, what's happened to you? You're not as interesting. And there is a horrible transition stage, you see, when you start to see the possibilities of an alternative way of viewing the world, but you still desperately need the reassurance of all the people who view the world the other way. And then you're in a tough position, really tough position. I want my mother to approve of me, somebody tells me. At the same time, I know they can't, that she can't. Christ was originally going to teach the Jews. He was going to be the Messiah for the Jews. And the Jews said, baby, we don't want a Messiah. The priest said, we've got the temples going. It's all cool. You know, we don't want to upset the apple cart with any visionaries. We know how it is. Abraham told us and Moses told us it's all cool. And you're clearly just a hustler and be on your way. Jesus said, then we will teach the people of the nations. Teach the nations. Because the chosen people don't want to be chosen anymore. Prescription has got to be respected. Teach only those who are ready to hear. And ready to hear means that a person says, how is it? Can you help me understand? Can you explain to me? I want to know. They've got to reach out. The hand has got to come out. There's got to be that movement towards. I mean, I will meet, I'm sure, in Washington at the AAHP meetings next week. I will meet maybe 50 of my old colleagues, people that were graduate students with me or people that were on faculties at one place or another with me. And they will all be loving and friendly because I'm kind of notorious and they all sort of want to make a contact with somebody this notorious. And they'll all, because in psychology, I'm that poor guy, you know, that got brainwashed by Tim Leary. Young, promising, good boy, who led astray by wild Irishmen. And they'll all want to sort of commiserate with me. It's great to be surrounded by people who are pitting you. When you're not suffering. And out of those 50, maybe a couple will say, what are you into? Not out of like, I met one on the plane going to Vancouver a few weeks ago, and he says, tell me, what are you doing? And I said, why do you want to know? He says, well, so I can tell everybody back at the department, because the fact that I've seen you and I know, everybody keeps wondering, what's happening with Dick? I can go back and tell him. That motivation leads to a certain set of stories I can tell him. The other kind of motivation of his saying, look, you and I were in the same business 5 years ago. Now you're doing something else. Why is it you're doing this other thing? Because I'm still in this business, and what is it you found lacking, and what is it you're now finding, or what is it all about? I mean, how much can a human being be a student to another human being? And maybe out of next weekend's darshan in Washington, in the guise of a presentation at a national meeting, there will be a couple of consciousnesses that will say, yeah, right, of course. They'll just be ready to hear something. And then the next weekend they'll be here.
Are you going to speak on anything in particular?
I haven't any idea. I never know what I'm going to speak on until I'm standing there.